this is probably a week of all the post the question and response times where I have the least amount of material, which to be precise, zero. I have no extra slides. In the other weeks, I've had more slides or more teaching to do or ways to lead us into the next thing. I don't have that this week. It's just raw and let's just, so somebody help me. We have 25 plus 15, 40 minutes left divided by 5. We have 8 minutes for the 5 principles. Thank you. I tell my kids all the time, my last math class was in high school because I advanced placed out of it in college, and they don't exactly teach math at seminary. I mean, except for where the books of the Bible are. So let's give about 8 minutes. I'll just try to keep an eye on rough 8 minutes. So somebody can call out, whoever asked the first question can call out which principle we're going to start with first. And then Yang will put it up on the screen.
Like, welcome back.
Are we passing yet?
No. I just opened the floor to questions because I had no material. So if nobody has anything.
Nobody's jumping in. Right.
Hold on. Corey's going to make a statement first and then.
This is one of those hard weeks where this the teaching is convicting, I think, to all of us, because the passage talks to all sides of the issue and has really practical things that are very difficult to do for all of us. So,
and that didn't help that I kept meddling into all other issues, too. Alcohol and food. I mean, it's pretty broad. It starts hitting. I was thinking, like, somebody was saying something about, you know, like, I just want to move on from this topic. And I said, hang on. Beginning now, it gets really practical. We've been fairly theoretical about what is the church and all those things. This starts getting really like my life today, how do I live kind of stuff. So it's a little bit more difficult. Okay.
I guess I speaking of conviction, I was thinking about this. Don't contempt. How do I not express contempt for those who would maybe disagree with me? And I think for me, what I struggle with a little bit in this, and I think I spoke out of that last week when I asked a questioner, is to intellectualize this discussion.
Yep.
You know, this issue is near and dear to people, and it gets at, do you love me? Are you going to accept me?
Yeah. I want to acknowledge, especially, I was talking to somebody last week after the service about, for some of us, this is a theoretical conversation, and those others of us sitting in this room, this isn't about them out there, it's about us, right? And so I want to especially say to those of us in the congregation that are gays and lesbians, and we acknowledge that this is an awkward conversation. We're not talking about my sex life, right? And so I appreciate those of you that are sitting in here, and it's uncomfortable, and I just want to acknowledge that. And Georgia, what you said last week was just beautiful. And I meant to say that to you in email this week. And I have had people, I had people all week long from across the spectrum just say, that was just so beautiful and thank you.
So as you were talking about verses 15 through 18, don't flaunt your liberty.
Mm-hmm.
How does that actually work in a context where you have gay people who are married and gay people who believe you have to be celibate? Like, it's different than drinking where it's just kind of part of your life, but it's actually, you know, a huge part of your life and a part of your identity.
I can't unmarry when I come to church on Sunday morning and then remarry afterwards. Right?
And then is there any implication for those who just have opinions who are not gay, or is it just none of their business?
Right. To the first part, that's the task of next week. Is there's one thing that's the big challenge always in preaching. It's one thing to say this is what they did back then and there. So let me switch topics to take some tension out. It's easy to say, what did Paul teach about slavery? Well, he said, if you're a slave master, be kind to your slaves, and if you're a slave, be a good slave. Right? It's easy for me to say that's what Paul said back there. It's a lot more difficult than to say that today, because I'm not going to say that, right? I'm not going to ask for a show of hands. None of us in the room believe that, right? And so it's somewhere between the world of back there and how we live now, things got turned and changed and processed, and there's a good historical record for that and a lot of other issues. So that is my task, the leadership team's task. We're further down this road than I'm letting on. We have some of our answers ready to go, but that all needs to be packaged for next week, and I'll get there. So I'm putting you off a little bit to say I'll answer that question next week. How do we move from there then? Because the issues are close, and they line up, but that's not perfect. Nothing ever is quite that perfect. And your second question was, that does kind of play again to a little bit next week, and that there is a degree to which we all do need to follow after Jesus, and a little bit of what Paul seems to be suggesting is, you know what, the passage I wanted to refer to today, but it was already a three-hour sermon, was, do you remember when we taught, I don't remember when this was, but we use it with our kids, I love it, the passage of Peter and Jesus walking on the beach, and Jesus says, do you love me? And Peter says, of course I love you. And Jesus says, feed my sheep. Remember that? And do you remember how that passage ends with Jesus telling Peter the manner in which Peter will die? You will be led where you don't want to be led, that thing? And then I love this picture. So then it says Peter is walking down the beach, and he says to Jesus, what about him? I think we're talking about John at this point. What about him? How's he going to die? Remember what Jesus says? What is that to you? You follow me. And we use this with our kids, right? But he got to blah, blah, blah. What is that to you? I told you to get in the shower. I don't care what your brother is doing. You're all laughing, but you know it, right? All the parents started laughing, right? So we say this to our kids now, like, what is it to you? It's not your deal. And so there is a degree to that. Yeah. That's the point of what he's saying. But in the community, yeah, don't be a stumbling block. But then that person's gone. Don't also run away from your liberties either.
So I think one thing that when talking about how about the weak and the strong,
yeah,
is the strong often have the attitude that, well, I used to believe X, but now I've seen the light, the heavens brought it, and I believe Y.
Uh-huh.
And we see that a lot. And sometimes Y is wrong and X was actually right.
Yep.
And you do that. I think, you know, talking about the Enlightenment and the Dark Ages.
Uh-huh.
Oh, so glad we're not in the Dark Ages when no one was smart and everyone was just in the darkness. And now we have the Enlightenment. And now we're great. And some of the Enlightenment was good and some of it was bad. I think we have to be cognizant that just because we no longer believe X doesn't mean that we're better or we're smarter and we move forward, whatever it is. So,
yeah, and if you read Wilson's book, one of the things he says is this whole era of disputable matters is a temporary situation. He said, and what you're doing when you're living in this tension of accepting everyone is you're waiting for it to be sorted out by history. You're waiting to see how it goes, and so to speak, how to see the spirit moving. And so if you think about other historical issues, maybe there was a time where slavery is okay, right? Then it became a disputable matter, and then it didn't become a disputable matter anymore. We're not arguing about that in the church, right? And so he says that this disputable matter thing is a place that we live in, understanding that there's a tension, and we'll decide in time whether it's X or whether it's Y. Yes?
So, and to go along with that, sometimes theoretical things like predestination, free will, we don't have to land somewhere perfectly, but in practical decisions, it usually goes one way or the other.
Yeah, there's some issues that the church is always going to hold in tension. Always, always. But typically, those don't have lifestyle consequences.
You had said that when your friend Steve was here, and he was talking about everything that's going on in his church, and at the end of the day, you don't even know what he believes.
I don't.
That bothers me.
Why?
Here's why.
Okay.
Like, it doesn't bother me, you do, but I think a lot of people do that, is we don't, like, for me to, like, be in a close relationship with someone, I want to know them.
Yep.
Even if, like, I don't think it's a huge deal, I want to know their opinion, because I think that tells a little bit more about a person. And and so to be vulnerable with our friends, more so, I think it's easier to be vulnerable with our friends than with other people. But if we can't be, and I'm not pointing you out, but
it's
I think we all do it.
I have a response,
too.
Yeah.
But like, I think it's so easy to share what we want to share, or to ask, you know, and instead of just like being an open book, or in the other respect, being able to ask those hard questions because you love that person and you want to know. And I don't know. I just was, maybe I share too much to people, but I feel like then they get to know me better.
Yeah.
And just how I hope that they open up to me.
Yeah. So.
Okay.
Yeah. No, I hear what you're saying. And let me, I'll tell you the specifics. As part of it is, part of that for me in that relationship, there's other relationships where people, not very many, but there's, I don't know very many people that have actually asked me flat out, where are you on this?
Like, I will after church.
Hey, I can dodge with the best of them. I can answer questions with questions all day long. For me, part of that is Steve and I are getting to know each other, and he lives far away. And so when we do talk, there's like other things that we share much more in common about. I want to talk to him about being a dad and being a pastor and a writer and that kind of stuff. And so we just haven't got there. And my interest in other pastors is not so much what they believe, but what's your church's practice. So he and I, when we talk about it, it's pastor to pastor. It really is that conversation about how is your denomination church handling this, not necessarily what. Because at the end of the day, I don't even know that what I said earlier, I don't know that my opinion is even that important in the life of this church. That if you come into my office, at that point, I feel like, okay, so that's where I was trying to say, like, I see myself in that point in service to the Holy Spirit in the moment, right? So my job is not to interject into that space, but rather to be in service and to help you in your journey, not, does that make sense? And so sometimes my opinion about an issue can get in the way of me doing that. Let's use the alcohol thing. If you come into my office and say, hey, I'm considering giving up alcohol for my life, and I say to you, I love alcohol, like, I have a tumbler in my desk. I don't. But if I do that, that colors the whole conversation in a way that puts us on a bad trajectory. And so sometimes it's better for me as in my professional pastor thing to hold back and say, my opinion will only make this, will only get in the way of me doing the good work here. Does that make sense? And it's a weird spot. Do you want to speak to this? Because this is a little bit of spiritual direction stuff too, right? That there's a space where, and that's why I've been reticent for years to say what I'm thinking about it, because I don't want to be associated with a camp and get, then the other side's like, well, he's going this way and he's not on our side. Rather, I believe I want to work with everybody. I want to help everybody in this room be convinced in their own mind and do what they do as unto the Lord. That's my passion, not that everybody think like me. Part B to that is there is definitely then layers of intimacy. Like, I think through this in my life, like, where, because I'm an oversharer, I'm a dean, for goodness sakes. My dad starts things with, maybe I shouldn't share this, but.
Story of my life.
They did this last night. I shouldn't tell you, but my mom, for my birthday, we had a birthday party last night. No, this is great. My mom, have you seen that thing on Facebook where people make these, like, little white chocolate domes, and then they pour the dark chocolate over and it melts away? My mom made that for my sister and I for our birthdays. It was awesome. She took so much time to make that. And so my dad said, because he thought he needed to say it, which was, he didn't need to at all. He's like, your mom, I shouldn't say saying this, but your mom took a lot of time making that dessert. Which, duh. So what was I saying? Because I am an oversharer by nature, I have to think through sometimes this thing I'm thinking about right now. Do I share it here? Do I share it here? Do I share it here? Do I share it on Facebook? Do I share it to the congregation? It would not be healthy for you or me if I came out here every day and just said everything I think about everything. It would be a bad, and some churches are like this. That dude from Arizona is kind of like this. Like, what's his name? He's famous for, like, going up to Border Patrol and fighting with them and all stuff. Anyway, because of Facebook, we all live on a public stage at some level. There is a degree to which I think things are inappropriate for me to share out there because they're intimate. And I think that's the challenge in this text for us, is to think through, is this helpful to the community for everybody to know what I think about X and Y? Does it actually go contrary to making peace? Right? So, like, if I want peace with my neighbor, I really don't need to know who he's voting for. But I really do kind of want to know what my wife's thinking in this regard. Right? So I don't want to sacrifice peace with my neighbor for, I don't care who he's voting for. That's the challenge of Facebook, is we've taken everything out here and moved it right into here. Everybody needs to know what I think about everything, and I don't think it's healthy. I think there's so much, particularly to women, it's particularly to moms. There's so much shaming that happens because everybody has to air their opinions about everything and judge everyone that it's there's ugliness there. Did anybody see the Monica Lewinsky TED Talk? It's a couple years old, about public shaming, and oh my gosh, heartbreaking. I cried. She's my age. I didn't realize when I was that age that 22 is really young because I thought, I'm 22, I'm an adult. Whew. Sorry, I'm getting off on all kinds of tangents. Where are you, Ed?
On the drive-in today, the contemplation of evolution and evolving from our original thoughts.
That's a heavy morning drive-in.
And it's only about 7 minutes.
Yeah.
Where we used to be and where we are now.
Yeah.
Paul, Peter, Billy Graham all have changed their thought processes through their time frame in being in ministry.
Yeah.
As I sat in church today, principle two and principle three are interchangeable. Change the principle two and say these are instructions for the week.
Sure they are.
And
they're really for all of us.
Principle three interchangeable and say these instructions are for the strong.
Yeah.
And then principle one makes complete sense then. Mm-hmm. To accept everyone for where they are, mm-hmm. and what they believe. And then always comes to mind the Rush lyrics, if you choose not to decide, you still have made a choice.
Yes. Oh, I like that. Yeah. I like we worked Rush in. Sweet. I somewhere just recently read something where somebody said, if you don't change your mind, at some point in your life, if you don't change your mind, you're doing it wrong. That we all can say, I used to think this way about whatever. Politics, religion, life, you know, you learn new things and you grow. I think I said last week, it's only politicians and pastors who aren't allowed to change their minds. I know. You all are good to me. I get to change my mind. But, I mean, really, for a lot of pastors, to change your mind on any topic can be your job. And for politicians as well. It's great that I keep lumping myself with politicians.
So this is, I guess, kind of a question to the wider talk of this rather than today specifically. But we're referencing like slavery a lot, right, as something that was disputable in the contextual frame, but now kind of has moved to an undisputable matter in this day and age. And I would say that there's probably some people on some sides of this coin today that are going just kind of waiting. When does this become an undisputable matter? So I guess that's just the wider question of when does something become an undisputable matter and like who gets to determine that?
Yeah, right. Well, it goes back to some of what I said last week. I think there is a general in history, there's a consensus of the church that grows. And then I think there's always going to be pockets. I mean, we have the Amish for goodness sake still, right? So there are always pockets where they get stuck in a time and a place. But the rest of the church moved, and it's never that, there's never like a clean and, except, I would just say there comes a point where the consensus of the church tips over, and this is the way most churches believe. This is the way, or a particular congregation, in this conversation specifically, you get a whole congregation, I have friends that their whole congregation say, oh, it's not disputable in our body anymore, we're all in agreement, because all the people who agreed on the other side left, or whatever, we're over there. So there's that level. It could be at the local church level, but then at the broader church, that's harder because the church is in different countries and different places, and that takes a lot longer to get to. But I think it really gets to kind of the principles that we talked about last week about consensus and understanding and how when you get to that spot where everybody looks at it and goes, okay, we understand why Paul said this. However, you know, we don't think that way anymore. The other one that goes, while you're getting that to Beth, the other one that goes in that category is a divorce and remarriage. So Jesus is really clear that if you divorce and remarry, you're committing adultery for the rest of your life. And so when I was a kid, that was a big deal in churches, and then it's not anymore. So at some point, the church said, well, you know, all the ways we go about doing that, but then the consensus, I don't know very many churches these days who wouldn't remarry somebody that's divorced. It was a big deal where? At Caterpillar? How? Get this on the mic. I want this on the podcast.
It wasn't while I was there, but my dad was there before I was there. When he was early management, it was a big deal.
That if you were divorced and remarried?
If you were divorced and remarried, you couldn't be in management.
Really?
It went against their image.
Wow.
Okay, for me, I just have to say that the tension in all of this for me is less in the personal rumbling that I've been doing on this subject for the last 3 years or so because of my own personal life experiences. So I've gotten to a place where I know exactly how I believe. Can you address a little bit about the difference between, you know, if we're talking about acceptance versus affirmation, the church, if the church decides to act in certain ways because of what leadership believes, that is pretty much affirming.
Yes.
So do, yeah, as an individual, this is where the tension is. As an individual, if I'm not certain.
You have to
certain,
pick a practice. You have to pick a practice.
Yeah. So it's okay, in your estimation, it's okay if the church and our individual tension are not the same, I guess. Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
I mean, for example, well, let me be more specific. I'm going to just, I guess, is it okay to be specific? Okay. If the church decides that Imago Dei is going to marry gay Christians, I'm not quite sure where I am on that yet.
Right.
I'm very sure where I am on acceptance of gay Christians.
Yeah.
For me.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm just not sure where I am on the church affirming that. I'm in process, okay? So what's the difference, and how do we as individuals deal with that difference between what our church might come to or believe and what we might?
Right.
I think about it, I was thinking about it in relationship to people who've been in a full gospel church and have a practice of speaking in tongues. They don't do it here because the church doesn't really affirm it, but they might still have that in their home. But is that comparable, or there you go.
Dustin's going to answer that.
That's a good thought.
That's the point of the spear. That's the tension. And so I'll just pull back the curtain. For our leadership team, we're pretty set on where we're going. We're still wrestling with the gay marriage thing. It's hard because to not says something and to do. Whatever you do, you've made a choice. And so that's a challenge then to create a space. I think there's some pathway there, and I'm, again, going to punt to I need to unpack a lot. I feel like I need to say a lot of things about marriage and I don't feel... Honestly, right now, I don't feel comfortable speaking for the leadership team when you can pray for us. We're meeting on Wednesday night, and that's specifically the issue still is, what about gay marriage? Yeah. Yeah, so the bigger question to that, to me, is the difference between the individual and the church. Wait, what? I know what I was going to say to her, but what are you asking? Oh, yeah. So... No.
Tension between individual convictions and church-wide practice.
I'm trying to think in terms of analogy. Here's what I think I'm trying to say. I think what Paul's trying to say is that the default mode of the church is always acceptance. The default posture is to not put a stumbling block. And so the job of the church... To me, what I understand my job to be is to help you all do what you do as unto the Lord. That's the concern of the church. That's where the church's thing stops. Yep, I think so.
Since I have a microphone and everybody keeps ignoring me, can I share something that you're going to listen to what I say?
Yeah.
No.
Isn't it powerful feeling? It's great. Go.
Yeah.
You've got the mic. Go.
So I'm very... Where you're at, Karen.
Yep. By the way, that's probably where most of this church is on that I can tell you so many people in this church are like, I'm all for all the acceptance. Marriage feels different, and I feel like I'm teetering day by day back and forth. And it's right. a textual thing, and I hope you all hear love, acceptance. Yeah. But I'm struggling with text, you know, at that level. So go on.
And I think the best example I can think of what I feel like it's going to look like for me in this church is when a really good friend of mine came out of the closet to me. I told him, he was very nervous to tell me because he knows I'm fairly conservative. And I said, and I knew what he was going to say, but I said, before you say anything, I want you to know I love you and nothing you can say or do is going to change the way I feel about you. I've known you my whole life. There's lots of things in my life you disagree with. There's things in your life I disagree with. But under all of that is a really long relationship and we love each other. And that's how I look at it for our church. Where the tension gets for me as our community is the contempt. Because I've already felt that. Mm. Where the, well, once you see what I see.
Right.
Or once you're, you know, as loving as I am or as open as I am, then you'll be
yep.
this.
Yep.
And I think, and I've seen it on both sides.
Yep.
I think once we can get to a point where we can even lessen that or get away, preferably totally get away with that, yeah. that's when we live in a really good spot of being able to
yep.
live in community in that.
Oh, man.
And I know that's been like my prayer for all of these conversations, that we're able to have those kind of conversations and not look at each other in contempt
yep.
and not compare each other.
Yeah.
Because that, like what you're talking about, Facebook. That's what happens.
Yeah.
And I've blocked like 12 people recently because yeah. I don't want to unfriend you, but I don't want to hear your hate either.
Yeah. Yep.
Because there's always so much more to a story. And just because I say I'm teetering on the marriage thing, don't put me in this pocket.
Yep.
There's so much more to why I have that decision.
Yep.
You know, why I have that tension in my life.
Mm-hmm.
So I think we all need to keep in mind that while you have your story and why you came to your decision, so does the other side.
Sure.
And that's it.
I'll add one piece to what you're saying, too, is I think there's also a thing where when we identify with a side, we get really sensitive to what the other people are saying. And sometimes people aren't we all often read a fence in where there wasn't meant some meant. And I'm not pointing at you specifically, but we all do it. So we're all unintentionally contemptuous at times, and we all read contempt in when it's not actually there sometimes, right? And so that's where our brokenness is always, welcome to marriage, right? Like we read offenses in that weren't really there, and then we offend without actually knowing we offended all the time. And it brings us back to those places of saying, oh, I didn't realize how that would be taken by you.
I think the key thing in response to that is just empathy, like trying to understand the other person's point of view and not labeling, you know, two words that get used very often are heretic and bigot. And I think both of those words are incredibly hurtful and incredibly dangerous and show complete lack of empathy.
Yeah. And what we're going to do next week a little bit is talk about house rules. How do we house rule the Romans 14 thing together, where words like that are banned from our public discourse, where, you know, shaming people for taking a different side than me is banned at Imago Dei Church. We just don't do that. Trudy and Mary and Carolyn.
Okay, so
sorry to pick on you during the whole service, but
I appreciate it.
But
thank
we had
you.
A good conversation about that.
Oh, good. Awesome. When I think about your role as a pastor
yep.
of this church,
yep.
and you have a leadership team, and you are following what you feel Christ is leading you to do, right?
Yep.
So where is the respect of the authority of your leadership role in this church?
Again, Dustin. The way we function as a leadership team is we do things as a leadership team. So I'm not the dictator.
I know.
But I'm also, I don't want to be glib about that and pretend that I'm not the one that stands up here every week either with the microphone.
Right.
So obviously my voice matters. And as we've walked through this, I've had a real sense. I had a very, and I think some of you will eye roll at this, and I don't mean it disingenuously. I had a real gut check coming back from sabbatical with, will they still want me? Is this still the right place for me? And I think everybody that's involved in this conversation, we're all having that. right? We all, let's be honest, we all have a line somewhere in our head where if the church went this way, I don't know that I could keep journeying. Wherever those lines are, we all have them. And to not acknowledge that's probably a little bit disingenuous, right? I mean, some of them probably are ridiculous. If I came out and said, we are the slaveholding church now, you know, I hope all of you would march out of here in mass, right? So just like all of you, I've had to wrestle through that and then speak to our teams in a way that I'm not using that manipulatively, and I hope I haven't. I don't think I have, where I hope I've been honest with them, but not like, I'm leaving if you don't do what I want, you know, because that's the not dictator pastor who still acts like a dictator, and I hope I haven't done that. That's a good, hard question.
I feel great respect and compassion for your leadership.
Thank you.
I actually had a quote that I read yesterday, a day or two ago, that I thought really spoke to this. And I was listening to, I listened to a lot of audiobooks. This is not the quote from that. But in Love is an Orientation, Andrew Marin talks about how no matter where we stand on this particular issue, whatever, we feel like we're the David and not the Goliath. That we feel attacked, that we feel like we're not accepted. Whether we're conservative or progressive or we're trying to pave a middle way, oftentimes because the detention in this discussion, we always feel like we're somehow the outsider. And so, anyway, so this quote is kind of spoke to that. It says, whether or not we are gay or have loved ones who are gay, many of us are torn up over this issue. We're anxious and fearful because we're afraid of losing relationships over this controversy. Those who believe all homosexual acts are wrong fear they will lose standing with those who see it differently. Those who believe that it is wrong to exclude people over this fear that others who see it as a holiness issue will reject them. People are afraid that if they change their position on this litmus test question, others in their family or close circle of friends will be scandalized. Where does this anxiety come from? Much of it comes from the fear that our relationships with people we care about will suffer. It comes more precisely from our fear that we won't be accepted by those who disagree with us. Our belonging will be threatened. The gospel imperative to accept each other despite our differences over disputable matters is very good news indeed if we walk in it. It's good for us. It's a relief to let go of all the pressure that comes with having to judge this matter correctly. It's a relief to know that we can hold our own convictions without our belonging being threatened. It's in the chapter. Yeah, I think it's called Welcome and Wanted.
Yeah.
That no matter where we are, we want everyone's voice, that we all should feel wanted here.
Yeah.
That's part of what it's a disputable about. That's part of the tension of holding this.
And I think this is, I don't want to go back to your question, Karen. I think that what I desire is some kind of a space where you could say, try not to. Let's say Dustin's going to do a gay marriage. That you could say, I disagree with Dustin, but I accept Dustin. I love him. I love who he's about. I love what he believes. I believe in his godly character. And we disagree, and we refuse to separate over our disagreement. I think that's what Paul's saying is, and where there's situations, and that's where this one doesn't exactly line up, because you can't just un-gay for church for the sake of the community and then re-gay on your way out the door. It doesn't work like that, and so it's not the same thing as this, and so that's where we're trying to, like, figure it out. But that we just say, like, it's okay to not agree with your church. It is okay. Like, Catholics are pretty good at this, I think. I disagree with my church. I use contraceptives, for goodness sake, says every American Catholic, right? But I love my church. And I'm in tension with my church. It's okay. I still do the Eucharist. I still, you know what I'm saying? Like, that's one thing where I kind of admire the global Catholic thing that, you know, yeah, I don't agree. What's that? What'd you say? Not your mom. She agrees. Oh, right. Oh, she did. Yeah. Not everybody is. A lot of American Catholics are. And they see themselves as faithful to the church even if they don't agree. And I think that's different for us Protestants. We think that we have to line up point by point with our church, and our church somehow represents us. The church doesn't represent you, just so you know. The church is trying to represent Jesus. That's a different twist for a lot of us Protestants. Huge, huge twist for us Protestants. That the church isn't trying to represent me. The church is trying to represent Jesus. And I am always in conflict with Jesus somewhere. So.
Okay, I hate to always talk when it feels like there's been a beautiful point and we should stop there or something. But, so this is more, it's not really a question for you because this is your job to be here, but when we talk about acceptance, when we go through this, and maybe it's because we are very new to Imago. Mm-hmm. We started visiting about a year ago. And then we didn't come for a while, and mostly because I was trying so desperately hard to hold on to the church that we were at. But when we talk about this and we talk about acceptance and we talk about not leaving if the scale tips the way that we don't want it to tip, I feel this conflict inside of me. Like, I want to be here. I'm here because I know that there are people who agree with me and love me and accept me. And it's so hard to be the person that feels like you're not accepted. But I feel this conflict inside of me. Like, at some point, we all did that. We're here. We're at Imago. We say all the time that we all came from somewhere because we, you know, so many of us, that's our story. And I don't know how to hold that tension that I don't know. Like,
maybe we
when is it okay to walk away because we don't agree? And when is it not okay? When do we have to accept and stay here? And I don't know. I don't even know if it's a question. It's more of a confession.
But what if it's like this? What if it, and I appreciate your, I love you. what if it's like, you know, when you're dating and you believe this is the one and then it's not, and you know, it's not. And so there comes a point, and maybe it's even a marriage where you just know it's over, and that's so painful, and we've all had those painful experiences, some of us more painful than others, of a church that we thought this was the church. And then I say, the people that walk down the aisle the second time believe in it every much as they did the first time. They believe that this one is the one. And I've left churches. We all have, right? And I hope that this one, I never leave. And there may be a time to leave. You know, that's part of the reality. And that's, I think that's why you're not the only one with tears. There's lots of tears about this in a lot of places because for some people, they feel like this is the thing that signaled the end of the relationship. And other people feel like this is the signal of the thing that's the beginning of the relationship. And it's really, I appreciate it. I feel your tension. And lots of people feel your tension. You're not the only one. Nick?
So I agree totally in terms of accepting and offering moral credit and dignity to each position on this issue. But I can't help but thinking about the particularity of this issue.
Yeah.
And I think it's worth at least holding in our minds as we have this discussion about who's being accepted and who feels accepted and who feels ostracized, and the thought that keeps occurring to me is that I don't think that I can accept this as a level playing field where you have people on one side who think this way and you have people on the other side that think this way. And the reason for that is because there's a historical cultural force of condemnation in Western European culture that gay and lesbians have had to bear for hundreds of years up until, you know, recently.
Yeah.
You know? And so I think that it's important to keep that in mind as we have this discussion, that maybe this isn't exactly a level playing field.
Right.
And yeah.
Yeah. Thank you. We're over time, and I've got three more hands. Your call. You shut it down when you're ready to shut it down, but we do have Chrysalis and...
Ed, Megan, Joe.
Ed, Megan, Joe. Oh, I didn't even see Joe over there. Hi.
I wanted to remind you of what Reverend Powell from Richwood's Community Church went through about 4 years ago. And we can agree to disagree, but whatever the church Imago Dei decides, I have chosen this church because of you and because of the man of God that you are. And we can agree to disagree, and yet I still have my beliefs and you have yours. But at the end of the day, every Sunday, something that you said applies to my growth. And I want to encourage you to use that benchmark from Richwood's and go forward with whatever the decision that the church makes.
Thank you.
I'm supporting you.
Thank you. Who is next?
Hello. Hi. So I just really felt like God was telling me to say this. It's very, very personal.
Yeah.
So please just... be gentle with your reaction. So I am a nurse, and the things I'm going to tell you are going to be vague enough so they don't have, violate HIPAA or whatever. Grew up in a military family, very, very conservative, very Republican, very, like white middle class. So when I started nursing school, I remember really and truly believing that abortion was one of the worst sins that you could commit. And having never been a mom, never been pregnant, and I was doing my internship in the ER, not here, but in the ER, and I had one of my very first patients was an 18-year-old girl who came in with hemorrhaging after a botched abortion. She was losing about a third of her blood, and she was scared, and she was crying. And in that moment, I just remember hearing God say, "Shut up, Megan. I want you to go love her. That's all I want you to go do. I don't want you to judge her. I don't want you to do anything." And all I could feel towards her was compassion. Same thing with the gay marriage thing. Grew up thinking that and believing and being told that it was very, very wrong, and it was weird, and it was, something that people did when their minds weren't quite right. And then I took care of my first cancer patient who had a gay partner who ended up dying with us after months and months and months of building these really beautiful relationships with her and her partner. And the love that her partner showed for her was undeniable. It wasn't fake. And at that moment, I heard God tell me, "Shut up, Megan, just love them. Like, just take care of them. Like, I just want you to take care of my sheep right now that I've put in your corner. Like, that's all I want from you." So my views have changed. I still don't know where I stand on a lot of things. But I feel like in my life, God has multiple times just said, "Right now, what I need you to do is just love somebody. And let me deal with whether it's right or wrong." Mm. So when we first came to this church, very first time we came, it was too much for me. I wasn't ready. I was still not open-minded enough to handle it. And then after these experiences, Ben and I...
That dude is just too much for me. I love that. I understand.
Yeah, and then when we came back, we were at a very different place in our lives because I had had some of these experiences and so much more. And looking, when we originally came, I was scared that I'd be raising my kids in a place where there would be no structure and that they wouldn't feel like they had any foundation under their feet. And now it is so important to me that Emery and then hopefully Nigel here and June are raised in a church where it's okay to ask questions and have a discussion. That is so important to me, because if it's not allowed to at least discuss, then what are you supposed to do with that?
Right.
When you're especially when you get out on your own and the things that you had been taught your whole life about God aren't reflecting what you're seeing, and you're not allowed to have a discussion about it. Yeah. I want my daughter and my son to be able to have discussions and to challenge and to be able to grow and not come into this crisis mode when what they were taught about God doesn't line up with what they're seeing. Mm-hmm. So that's all I have to say.
Yeah. I want to say more, but I'm not going to. I'm going to save it. I have a couple weeks. What you said fits into a talk I want to give later, so I'm going to...
I was told by Dustin not to spread heresy, so I don't know that I have anything to say. But going along with some of the other comments that have been made, and nodding a bit more to the conservative side on this issue, it seems to feel like there's more of a tension for the conservative end as far as like the stumbling block thing. Like, yeah. You know, how does the church take whatever view if it's a little more liberal and not be, how does a conservative feel like that's not a stumbling block to them? And I get that tension. That's horrible. And it pains me. And I think everybody in this process is in some sort of really painful tension and everything. And one of the things that's occurred to me lately, is that it's okay to be uncomfortable. And it's usually good. But specifically, like, if there's a place in this spectrum where I'm a little uncomfortable with, and I don't feel like I'm very conservative on this issue personally, but say there is a realm out there and it pushes me and I'm uncomfortable with it, I keep thinking about any of my brothers or sisters in Christ who are gay, lesbian, what have you. How much tension have they been living in? For how long? How long have they had to just kind of pocket things and put things aside so they can come in these walls and be with the rest of us? And now the second that we want to ask that of somebody else on the other side of that issue, it seems like people get really like freaked out that they might have to shoulder something for a little bit so we can all be together. Yeah. And I don't think that's fair. I'm not saying it's easy. I'm not saying it's great and happy, but seriously, like, think about what you're being asked to do. Like, I know it's painful. I feel the pain too, but my gosh, we're having to do about that much of what all of our brothers and sisters have had to do for decades. And I don't know if that's a lot to ask in the big spectrum.
I'll finish with a quick story. I recently became friends with a transgender woman, and I've also become friends with her son at the same time. And so a couple years ago, his dad became a woman, and I know them well enough now to ask about it. Like, how was that? He's like, I drank a lot when I first found out. It was hard. He's like, my dad was my hero. And so at the time that he changed genders, he was the leader of a national Christian organization. And for him to tell his organization, I'm becoming a woman, meant that he lost a very, very good job and lost all his speaking engagements and lost everything. And I was telling some friends the story the other night, and it's really remarkable being in a room where people are introducing themselves and the light bulb's going on for people, like, oh, that's your dad? Like, and how they interact with each other. It's all obviously very complicated. If you've been around transgender people, it's complicated, always. And I was telling a friend about her, and he said, think about the cost of the prestige, the job, all of it. The surgeries, I mean, the cost of the surgeries, the reality of the surgeries, the continued ongoing strained relationship with your kids and your grandkids. And yet something in her had to do it that compelled her to do that. And I can't begin to understand that. I do not understand it. As far as I know, I will never understand what that feels like on the inside. But but I'm compelled by Jesus to love. And maybe I don't have to have a judgment for it, even in my own head, even with God. Maybe I don't have to say whether it's right or wrong in my own head. Maybe all I have to do, I'm just supposed to love, period. That's it. Jesus said, love. Like you love yourself, love. And yet we always want to pick up, like, but when do I get to judge them, right? Like, now do I get to judge? And I'm really challenged in that. Like, I don't need to have an opinion. I know her. She's my friend. I love her. That's it. That's all I need to do.
Can I say something real quick?
Sure.
I'd encourage everybody, as you think about this, I got this from Ken Wilson's book that you recommend.
Yeah.
Think about, if you're on either side of this issue, spend some time thinking about, pretend you're the pastor, and your friend comes into your office, what would you actually say? So you have an opinion, and you want the church's practice, say the church's practice agrees with you, what would you actually say to the person on the other side? What would you say to the person who feels like,
yep.
How would you actually say that to the person? And on the other side, if you're, if the church performing, if somebody comes in and feels like the church performing a gay marriage is the absolute abomination and they don't feel welcome here anymore, worshiping in this space anymore because our church affirms that activity, how would you actually talk to that person? So it's very different. It's not all theoretical anymore. It's like you're in a relationship. What do you say to that person because the church's practice disagrees with them? It's just put things in perspective a lot for me.
Yeah. That's, by the way, that's why I love that book, is he wrestles with it as a pastor. And that's what I asked our, by the way, just so you all know, that's what I asked our leadership team to do this week. You're me sitting in my office. What do you do? You tell me, king for a day, what do you do? Because it's different. It's just different when we move towards people in love than it is when people are an abstraction. I'm against all Cardinals fans. Dang it, except I know some of you and I like you. That's a silly example, but right? It's easy to hate all the Eagles fans because we don't know any of them. They're the worst. But when you know somebody, then it changes things. Love. Ooh, that's a good line. Love changes things. I'm sure I'm the first one ever to say that. Let's pray. God, be with us in our humble conversations. Help us to avoid offending and being offended unnecessarily. And when we do both of those, help us to forgive. Amen.